found this in Ganarum. Ganamir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's, it's
in the vaults.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys, with your host David Duncan and
me, Aaron O'Brien.
And
Faith Hertzberg.
Yes, indeed. So, what do we have going on today? Do we have any news? Any news, anybody?
Literally no news. No news is good news.
No, it's not. It's horrible news. How is Simon Pegg lying to us today by not telling us things?
He's lying to us just by keeping silent.
He is. Silence is admission to nothing, yeah. Or something.
He should be telling us more, but he won't. So we'll have to torture him.
Yes. As you may have heard, actually two episodes ago, which is strange, I spoke with Todd Sean Tay.
Oh, right.
Tay is how you say his last name. Anyway, I spoke with him, and we did an interview. We actually recorded that after the episode that came after it, so that's why I didn't refer to it. I referred to the Captain Pike Kickstarter. I shouldn't refer to me interviewing. So, if you're confused why we kind of mentioned it but didn't mention the interview, this is why. Time warps.
Yeah, we switched up the episodes.
Space, time continuum.
So the Captain Pike Kickstarter is happening, and you should go and check out the page. We have all that information on our webpage, so you can find out that where to go to donate.
Exactly, and looks like it's going to be really cool. We got lots of great actors in it, regulars from all other Star Trek series, and Aaron's favorite, Ray Wise.
Yay! Yeah, no, but it's what's cool about it is that they're really only, there's no profit involved for them. They're literally just looking out to make this a product as for a love for Star Trek. I mean, the only people really making anything is they're just paying the actors to actually come in and, you know, do their roles.
Yeah, for their time. I mean, yeah. It's not, no one's making a ton of money off of this, especially with all the cool rewards they're giving away. Like one of the tiers has like the actual velour shirts that they have.
I need one of those.
And so that's really cool.
I want one of them to be a night out with Ray Wise drinking. I think it would be amazing. That guy, would the things he could tell me.
Do a podcast with Ray Wise and just get plastered.
My
that would be an
God.
Awesome tier. So Todd, Sean,
I'm sure we'd have to fund the whole series, though, whatever the $200,000 they're looking for.
I think it's $112,000.
I forgot the exact amount they're looking for, but yeah, it would be a lot.
It looks really great. It's got the X&R guys doing the effects for it, so that alone has got me super excited.
Yeah, the effects are
and the
awesome.
Actors. Yeah. It looks like it's going to be a great project, so definitely give them a check out. So I don't think... the only other thing news, I just Googled Star Trek news today, and there's apparently a Star Trek, there's nothing movies or television show, but there's a Star Trek book for Voyager coming out where Janeway's apparently on trial for all the horrible things she did when she was in the Delta Quadrant.
And
she's on trial for capital punishment for being put to death. And I kind of want to read it just to see if she dies.
Oh my God. You want Janeway to die? Capital punishment? Does even Starfleet offer capital punishment?
I don't know. I just kind of read part of the synopsis. And I was like, ooh, capital punishment? This looks good.
Maybe we'll kill her if she's guilty. No, but she's... Okay, come on. I mean, it's like every captain goes through some trial. Like, why did you do that? You know?
Well, she should have at least been locked away for what she did and not promoted to admiral.
Locked away? Oh my God!
Way too long to get her crew home.
Oh, wait a second. What? I don't think.
But no, she got everybody home.
She got. I mean, if you look at every captain, they've always made some kind of mistake in their command that they could not foresee at the moment. They've all done it.
Not Picard. Picard's perfect. He's the perfect human being.
In some cases, more than once. Well, yeah.
No, but if we look at Picard, we talked about. The one with Data in Lore in the Borg, which one was that we were talking
Descent,
about?
Descent, part 1 and 2.
Yeah, Descent 1 and 2. Even Picard felt that maybe letting Hugh
So his leave. Biggest mistake was letting Beverly captain the Enterprise?
No, no.
Joking.
That he let Hugh go back, and when Hugh left, they didn't give him the... what was that? That
the virus. But even though they didn't, like, Hugh still messed up the Borg.
He did mess up the Borg. He did do that, but he didn't. That was unintentional. Like, they could have, like, basically destroyed the Borg, and Picard end up not doing that. So, and he felt regret for that. So, they all make mistakes. Even, you know, I don't know. I don't think Janeway deserves death. Maybe an examination. I mean, even when. Maverick from Top Gun crashed his plane. They, you know, he went on trial, but they let him go. So that was a 1980s reference.
Well, on the cover, she's already wearing her Admiral pip. So I'm assuming this is after she's promoted.
I'm still Admiral. Shut your mouth.
Well, it just goes to show you that all the admirals are pretty much corrupt in Star Trek.
There you go again. Knocking the top brass. You're not going to get up.
No, like, they're almost all affiliated with Section 31, and Section 31 almost always comes off as, like, really shady.
It is shady, and I'm not going to go into that again. We've talked about this before. I think goes against the violation of what Starfleet is, but I am not going to talk about that today. We are going to talk about something else.
So we're talking about Klingons today, right?
No. We are talking about Voyager, the episode Scorpion... Part 1 and 2, it's the episode where the Voyager comes against the Borg space, and they have to decide how they're going to get through it and how they make a deal to get through it. So, do we want to do a synopsis of Part 1 and 2?
Yes.
Am I doing a synopsis?
We always tag the synopsis as like a tag team thing, so I think we should do continuing a tag team thing. Do you want to start us off, Faith?
No, you guys go right ahead.
It starts off.
I'm still kidding.
It starts off. I'll start it off.
It starts off with Leonardo da Vinci.
In the hologram with Captain Janeway, Leonardo da Vinci, and they're talking, and she's enjoying Leonardo's company.
She wants to shack up with him. She's asking for a corner.
No, she's not asking for that. She's looking for inspiration. And that's when they get a hail from. Commander Chakotay they received some information from one of their probes, and it looks like they have run into Borg space, which they did not think that they anticipated it might happen, but they didn't think it was going to happen so soon. And
actually, we skipped the very, very beginning. I apologize. It's the shortest opener in Star Trek history, where you see two Borg cubes, resistance is futile,
yeah, well.
And then they blow up with two energy beams. Like never seen a Borg ship blow up that quick.
Yeah, that was an odd thing. You're like, what?
Yeah, there's no context for that. They just exploded.
You see some electricity, and then boom.
Toilets weren't working. So, they have a meeting, and they're in Borg, or they're entering Borg space, and they found a corridor, a narrow corridor through the Borg space. They've called the Northwest Passage.
How long has that been irrelevant?
What?
How long has that been irrelevant?
Yeah, the Northwest Passage. I know. It's like nobody's even thought about the Northwest Passage.
Like 300 years.
More. It's been 300 years today. But there's the Northwest Passage is filled with gravimetric distortions and strings of quantum singularities. So they have to kind of like decide to go through this, all this, you know, spatial anomalies instead of running into the Borg, because obviously the Borg are going to be certain death. So they take that. They decide to take that route to go through Borg space. And at the meantime, the Doctor, they have a Borg drone, which the Doctor has been kind of studying, and he's found that the Borg assimilates people by injecting these nanoprobes into their bodies.
Through the tubules.
Yes, through little tubes. And this is where they, this is how they create a different Borg. And so he's been studying that, and they're trying to figure out something they can do to stop that. to fight the Borg in case they run into it. And so everyone's kind of like preparing for running into the Borg because this might be it. This is when Kes has her
blue jumpsuit.
No. This is when Kes has her. I wasn't even paying attention to her jumpsuit. She has this vision of a Borg dismemberment sculpture.
Oh, it's like it looks like the Iron Throne, but made of Borg.
Yeah.
For those of you who are Game of Thrones fans,
it's a cool little thing that somebody came up with.
And the Borg might actually have some iron in them, so it might still be an Iron Throne.
Yeah. So she's getting these visions, which we'll talk probably more about Kes, that her telepathic abilities are like increasing, and then
Tuvok cannot rein it in.
Yeah, no, Tuvok can't control her, and then before they know it, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they have Borg fleet flying through, which is 15 Borg.
No, it was one. No, five. No, seven.
Yeah,
no, thank you. 15. Okay, Harry Kim, can you count, or is the computer just slow?
It's slow. And then when they get that, they just pass right through. They pass right by Voyager, ignoring it, and they go off flying up to something else.
One does a fun little like, "Oh, look, there's something I'll scan." No, it's old human technology. I don't need that.
Right. So that being said, they're confused, but they're kind of relieved at the same time. They don't have to face 15 Borg cubes, which they'd probably die for sure. And this is where Janeway and Chakotay have a little meeting, and how she feels that maybe we should just settle someplace in the Delta Quadrant and just give it up, trying to get home, because now we're up against this Borgs. We might not make it through. And Chakotay kind of assures her that she is not alone and that he'll always support her.
Except for when he doesn't.
Which we'll find out is a complete lie, the Maquis bastard.
That's why he's so adamant in his support.
It's like his eyes are crossed, his fingers are crossed.
His
like,
toes are crossed.
His toes are crossed. He's probably
you know, the thing is that it was a nice scene, too. And it's like you can even tell that, you know, like Janeway was kind of touched by it. She said, like, I can't imagine my life without you now and that you've been part of it. And then, you know, we'll find out later, but basically that Chakotay just backs out of the whole thing. So, well, we won't go further into it, but I felt bad. Now, in retrospect,
As we discussed, we saw his butt last time, right. And he totally does back out.
Yeah, no, exactly.
But she, at this point, Janeway, after hearing the somewhat comforting lie of Chakotay, goes to a place where she can get some comforting truth, which is... back at Da Vinci's on the holodeck, and he is played by John Rhys-Davies. Love John Rhys-Davies. And he's staring at the wall. He's looking at this at the shadows.
I think you jumped ahead a bit.
We missed a section there. What? Because
you jumped ahead.
No,
there's a reason that she was looking at the wall.
Yeah, we've jumped ahead a little bit because what happens first is they find that the signals from those 15 Borg ships have disappeared.
They go.
Janeway, of course, as always, has to investigate, which always bites him in the ass. So they go investigate.
This is why she should be killed.
No!
Instead of going, oh, let's just go look at this thing. That's well, everything. Oh, look, oh, she's like a. She's like
I a have to admit, that dragon. Always gets them in trouble every time. But they do go investigate, and they do find that the Borg's fleet has been completely destroyed, and there is one unknown ship there. It's a. Biological ship that's still attached to one of the remnants of the Borg cubes.
I love how they give a description. Oh, we've seen these before. The Breen have them. Like, when have we ever really seen the Breen very much?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, they're just saying that they've seen it before in their databanks. But so their tech won't actually even bother this biological ship.
The Borg are barely even able to hurt these things.
Right. So they Tuvok, Harry, Kim, and Chakotay beam aboard the cube, and they kind of investigate. And this is where they will come in contact with the with. These species that they've run into.
8472.
Yes. But meanwhile, while they're on there, Kes has another vision. It's a vision of Kim screaming in agony.
Like a girl.
Yeah, so
that's also where they found the sculpture as well.
Yes, they found the sculpture.
So the sculpture's true, and she has this thing. So now they're like, you know, Kim knows he's in for it.
No, Kim doesn't know. Kes knows Kim is in
not
for
yet.
It.
Not yet. Kes yeah. knows. Nobody
knows. One of my favorite sequences inside of this Borg cube is the Borg who's like up against like part of the wall of the alien ship.
It's
and I don't
to
know if the
it.
Borg are just stupid or if he's trying to be the little engine that could, because he keeps assimilating it. Zap. Assimilate. Zap.
Yeah. No, but that's Borg behavior. You know, they just like, just keep trying. Just keep trying.
If you first you don't succeed, try. He had a good kindergarten teacher, guys.
Yeah, and then she was, assimilated too.
That explains a few things.
Yeah, it does.
It really
the
Borg does.
Queen is a kindergarten teacher.
Oh my god, that's terrible.
It's
so
how they establish their assimilating protocols, actually.
Fast forward, so they do run into the species, which is a species called 8472. It's a highly evolved species that can somehow, you know, anything the Borg throws at it, they are not affected. They cannot be assimilated. Their weapons don't seem to bother them. And the encounter, Harry Kim is attacked, and he is put some kind of poison is put into him, or some kind of venom or something, and he collapses, and they are able to beam them out just in the nick of time.
With a boner lock.
Yes, yeah, they have a skeletal lock, yeah.
Oh, skeletal, I'm sorry.
Yes.
My mistake.
Yeah, Bellana kind of...
Yeah.
Well, they were all guys, so...
Bellana Storrs is like, got their boners!
I should be able to lock on this. Yeah, I just thought about it. I can do it, I think.
She's very popular in Starfleet. So,
too bad it would be funny if they just left the rest of them behind and they were all screaming.
It was funny if she'd come up with some difficulty trying to lock on. I'm sorry, it's just too small to sample.
Oh, no! I just can't get a lock.
I just can't get a lock. It's too small. There's not enough mineral mass. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. So they're saved for the boner lock, and then they... Kim is now in the... is in sick bay, and he is getting covered with basically
tendrils.
Yeah,
they're eating him from the inside out. One's going through out of his mouth into his nose, so he can smell himself being eaten.
He's like licking his own boogers. So that being said, the doctor can't even decipher the DNA. It said it'd take him years to decipher this. So this is like beyond
so
them.
Dense.
Yeah. So, but he thinks that the Borg nanotechnology might hold some key to try to save Kim and anybody else who might be affected by this. So he's getting to work on that. And by the way, Kes has another premonition wingding here from the species 8472 is the weak will perish. So
instead of resistance is futile, the weak will perish.
They all have their little motto.
Yes.
So
At that point, I prefer the resistance is futile bit to the weak will perish.
The weak will perish.
Because if they're killing the Borg, that implication is no.
It's like everything. Everything's going.
Yeah.
Everything
all
must
of
go.
Us.
So. But they do retrieve information from the Borg cube that Kim got, and it was basically the species was known as Borg as species 8472, and they do come from the Northwest Passage area. So this kind of puts this whole thing off that they can't go through the Northwest Passage because they're going to run into the species 8472. So now they have to figure out something else because that's not an option for them to go through anymore. And Janeway doesn't know what to do because she doesn't. She feels like they can't take the crew can't go home, but she doesn't want to tell the crew that. So she has to think about it. And what she does is she does a little unwinding with Leonardo da Vinci. And then what happens, Dave?
Oh, is this the part where she falls asleep and, you know...
Falls asleep.
And she goes and prays with Leonardo da Vinci
the chapel. She doesn't go pray, but she decides she's going to go talk to somebody else other than God. She's going to make a deal.
You see, this is where Janeway goes wrong. She could have gone and had some quality time with Leonardo and God.
No, but she made a deal with the devil, and the devil is the Borg.
Do you ever want to dance with the devil in the candlelight?
She's on a walk with candlelight.
It was a good point because it's sort of like she gave him that little thought of that spark of like, oh, maybe I could do something else. So she decides she's going to make an alliance with the Borg to develop the technology of the nanotechnology attacking the species 8472's cells, and that they could get they could prevail against them, and by this way they'd give this weapon to the Borg, and the Borg would give them safe passage through their Borg space.
If she can negotiate with the collective.
Right, that's always the thing. Now, here is where, after they have their little meeting with the crew, Chakotay...
Make an alliance with the Borgs? Exclaims Tom Paris.
Yeah. Shut up, Tom.
Put you to the holodeck and play with those...
I'll find you back at the penal colony where I found you. So this is where Chakotay and Janeway have a little exchange of how he gives them the parable of the scorpion and the fox crossing the river, and how the fox doesn't want to take the scorpion across the river, and the scorpion says, no, I won't sting you, I won't, you know, and then he brings him across the river, and halfway across he stings the fox, and the fox is like, how could you do that? Because it's in my nature. This is actually a very old story. Actually, I've heard it as The Scorpion and the Frog.
Yes, they changed it for television for copyright. I don't know. I'm just making the copyright. But it originally was the...
I thought it was an Aesop's Fable tale, but I could be wrong.
Yeah,
but
it was an Aesop tale with a wolf and a scorpion.
Okay, so it was an older story. But I mean, so
the second animal changes, but the scorpion, that remains constant.
The scorpion stays the scorpion. Anyways, all that matters is that... Chakotay talks about this, and obviously it gives the title of this two-part episode. But he basically says he objects to the whole idea. He doesn't think it's a good idea. He thinks that that it's not going to work. That we can't trust the Borg, and that they're wiping out a whole species of the everything works, we could kill the whole species. And Janeway even says that might be a good thing.
It might be a good thing for the Delta Quadrant to have these things assimilated by the Borg. Okay. So the man who was a terrorist is the one who wants to take the high road here. And the Federation versus the one who wants to like go down like to the depths of badness. This is a reoccurring theme between Janeway and Chakotay, which makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah. I have to say I side with him on it though. The enemy of my enemy is not my friend in this scenario.
Yeah, I gotta give Janeway a lot of props. This is where I think is the difference. This is where Janeway is a captain and Chakotay is not a captain, because here she has the gall and the she has the bravado to go and do this, where he would be like, no fucking way.
Balls.
Just because she has the cojones doesn't mean it's exactly the most intelligent decision.
I'm not saying that, but I think she does handle it quite well, no matter what.
Oh, yeah.
This is what I'm saying. This is what I think makes a Federation captain compared to a Federation commander, where they have the actual... the brass to go and do this, where Chakotay's like, I'm not doing that, you know. So where most mortals fear to tread, he would she's going to do that. I mean, you see the same thing with
roles. Just seem like they're like, oddly reversed. He was a terrorist, people, and now he's like all pansy.
Yeah, but you can be a terrorist with principle.
He's looking at the preservation of the whole. I mean, there's no sense in going in balls first if you're going to have nothing left.
I mean, I'm not disagreeing with everything Chakotay's saying. I'm just saying that
I don't disagree with
you. No, the bravery bit makes sense for a captain.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
He's just trying to preserve the crew.
I don't necessarily disagree either. Like, I mean, like, you know, wiping out an entire race just to save yourself isn't necessarily the right thing to do. I just feel it's weird that their backgrounds are so different, where where she's like Federation and they're supposed to be held to this higher principle, and this guy's a terrorist and he's the one who's holding to the higher principle and she isn't. I'm not disagreeing with him. I'm just saying, yeah, like, it just feels like a role reversal that doesn't need to be there.
It's an interesting shift in perspective.
I don't know if it's. I mean, it's that those. These are heavy things we're talking about. Where people come down. I mean, some people have different ways of looking at that. You know, I mean, here if the species 8472 survive and they destroy the Borg, then they'll wipe everyone off the whole the galaxy. I mean, sooner or later.
Yeah.
And if you let the Borg destroy them or help the Borg destroy them and assimilate them, then you have a greater threat in the Borg. So either way, you're kind of between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah.
It just depends on what hard place you build.
Exactly.
Maybe we should finish the synopsis first.
Before we get into this.
Before we get into the heavy debates.
Yeah, I know.
I think we all have really interesting perspectives on it. I think, that way we could go more in depth later.
Yeah, I think this is a heavy subject. But so there we have it, the little disagreement between, or not little, but the disagreement between Chakotay and Janeway. And Chakotay says that he'd support her, even though he disagrees with her. So
you're the captain. I'm the first officer. Oh, yeah.
So they come to a Borg planet where Janeway tries to present their deal. And the Borg is basically no way. But then after, you know, maybe a little cajoling, they bring Janeway aboard.
They beam her over to protect themselves from, you know, being heard by Janeway, like, because she's like basically like calling them like wet weenies, and the Borg don't want her crew to like hear her say this to the Borg. They don't want to be like talked down to in front of like, you know, other people.
Why did you keep calling me?
There's witnesses.
And they just like beam her over mid sentence. It's like, don't say that in front of your crew. We don't want to hear.
So. But at the very so while she's stating what they're going to negotiate over, the nine bioships come in and they just start blowing up planets and blowing up Borg cubes, and then the Borg cube that Janeway's on still has the Voyager and a tractor beam starts taking off, and they just get away.
I love how these alien ships make a Death Star ring and blow up the planet. And then I love how all the debris hits the Borg cube and all misses Voyager.
Yeah, it was very very fortunate for Voyager. So that's the end of part one. Part two then starts off basically where they left off, that the they're flying away, and on Janeway is still on the cube, and now Chakotay's in command.
They're trying to beam her off. She calls back.
She
says,
calls,
"Hey, stop it! Part of the deal is I've got to stay over here."
Yeah, so she's staying there, and then she asks Tuvok to come over with her, and from there they start working on the nanoprobe idea, and what was I going to say that? That's when the doctor has his breakthrough with the nanoprobes, that they can actually get rid of the cells from species 8472. I wish they had a better name. Anyways,
8472.
Anyways,
it's a fun number.
So it looks like Kim is going to make a recovery. At the same time, now Kes is having more telepathic visions, where now that the species is now coming after her, and she's like, so she's having actual visual telepathic hallucinations.
She's seeing them in like the reflections on all the shiny walls, and
basically she's saying that they're watching them through her. Somehow they are watching, so they're tapping into her brain and must be using it because they are telepathic.
They got that Wi-Fi set up between him and her.
No security risk there.
Yeah, I know, right?
She needs to encrypt her Wi-Fi.
And that's one thing that happens, that when they actually they tell that they're going to change their course because they know that Kes knows of what their plan is, so they have to kind of throw him off. So they change course, so the species won't know where they're coming, you know, where they're going. At the same time, they're going to put some neural transceivers onto Janeway and Tuvok. Janeway does not want them on her. And they
Tuvok's less resistant, but he's like, yeah, it's probably not a good idea.
Tuvok's like, well, it's the Vulcan way. And so she asked for somebody to be like a representative, like Locutus was from with Jean-Luc Picard. So this is where we get the introduction of Seven of Nine. And she has sort of a Frankenstein moment with all the
things like breaking off of her. It's like they just never use this drone. Like what's
so like? Yeah, she's been sitting there for like she's in mothballs.
She's in storage.
It's like blow the tube. I thought that was a little over the top too.
It was, but it was over the top. It was cool looking. I mean, it did look cool. It's just like, why is this? I thought the drones were always supposed to be working together.
It's I know. Like, and she just happened to conveniently be in the next room. So
it's like, oh yeah, we've got one of those communication people that we don't really use that often. Oh yeah, that's right.
Right. So they start riffing on trying to come up with how they're going to do the weapon. The collective want to do this like a multi-kinetic mine that's going to like you know destroy entire solar system,
like five light years.
Yeah,
of damage. This is like insane. This is like. This is huge.
Janeway says no about that, so makes you feel any better. She's a lot of innocent people would be killed.
Like there's a little blue dot that shows up like underneath the wing of this mine, and it's really quick, but it's like it's blue and white. It makes me think of the Facebook logo.
It is. It's like, oh my god.
It's the Borg.
So anyway, so they go they're developing the weapon as they transport Voyager through Borg space, and the idea is that they're going to hand over all their information when they get through Borg space. During that time, so Kim gets is fully recovered, and he's back to he's back on duty now. I would at least take a day off, but. You know, that's Kim, I guess.
He's an overachiever.
I guess. I would be like, I'm sleeping this off for a while.
The dorkiest overachiever ever.
So, right around that time, the species of 8472, more vessels emerge, and they start attacking Voyager and the cube. And this is actually interesting, I thought, too, because the cube actually puts itself between Voyager and the species not to be destroyed. And the cube is actually destroyed while saving Voyager.
And it does an awesome emergency beam out and like transfers like so much Borg stuff to Voyager. Because you look at this and you see Voyager, it's got like 13 like Borg,
yeah.
Just Borgy spots all over it.
Yeah, so the Borg are transported along with Captain Janeway, Tuvok, and Seven of Nine. And during that time, during the battle, Janeway was injured. So and she's knocked unconscious. So Chakotay now is completely in command, and they have some brief words in the sick bay. And she asks him to follow through with her
get
plan.
Get my ship home. It was beautiful acting. It almost kind of hit me in the feels. It was beautiful acting, and he's like. Yeah, then she goes like, no.
He's like, yeah, fuck no.
I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to respect what my commanding officers told me to do.
Right, so...
Even though I said I would in the first episode.
Exactly. Even though I said I'd support you no matter what. So Chakotay has a completely different take on this, and he actually goes to the cargo bay where they're all at, and he has two armed security guards with rifles. So this is who they're dealing with now. This is completely different. And they're going to they're still working on the everything together, but they basically Chakotay's going to give them the technology, and they're going to just drop them on a planet on some moon, and the Borg can come pick them up. And the reason why Chakotay is breaking off the deal is because they wanted the
Voyager. They want to go even further out of the way.
Yeah, they want to take Voyager like 40 light years, like 5 days
deeper
travel.
Into Borg space.
And he's like, no way. Deal's off. And, you know, they're going to do this. So the Borg try to take over Voyager. And they start breaking into access panels and taking over the security system. And this is where Chakotay just blows the... Blows most of them out the airlock.
But at this moment, when he's doing that, Seven of Nine is crawling through the Jeffries tubes, messing with deflector control, which is why he decided to blow the airlock. And good thing she's in a Jeffries tube with all those little things to hang on to.
Yeah, she actually survives, so she doesn't get blown out. But the
I did think it was funny that she started contacting and communicating with them before they repressurized it with oxygen. So.
Right.
I don't know how she's talking.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought about that too. I was like, that does not make any sense. So she's talking in a vacuum.
Yeah, inorganic material.
Yeah.
She's fine. She doesn't need to breathe.
No, she doesn't, but she can talk, which is like you can't talk without oxygen. But
yeah, because the sound can't travel without oxygen.
Yeah, maybe it's the implants there.
Yeah, I thought about that too, but I just thought it was funny from a science perspective.
So talking about science, they open the subspace rift, and Voyager is sucked into it, and they are now into species 8472's own dimension. So where they are,
fluidic space. Apparently, yeah. There's a lot of bad stuff in fluidic space for them to develop the. Horrible, devastating technology that they have.
What do you mean?
Their ships link together and form Death Stars, just like, oh, it's willy-nilly.
Oh, I thought
we don't need a giant space. Everything in fluidic space must be like horrible for them to like. If they have that technology,
I thought you were talking about like STDs or something like that. Okay, so
I mean, who knows what's floating around that liquid? I hope no one goes for a spacewalk.
That explains the immune system at least.
Yeah, I know, it's so heightened. Yeah.
They're able to take any organism over through contact. Yeah, my gosh.
It's like
that explains a lot.
It does. There you go. So
maybe that's what Kim got when he got scratched.
That's what he got.
He got an STD on his face. It's like a giant cold sore.
Oh.
Oh my God.
That went right up his nose too.
It's wow. Herpes up the nose. All right.
I wonder how it smells.
I was nose raped. Okay,
he
so
he couldn't smell it, man. He had tendrils
up her nose, up his nose. Where did we leave? Oh,
they're in fluidic space, because fluidic space is not regular space. The aliens know they're coming because of the mass that is rippling through the, it's like a pebble in a pond.
Right. Well, they know they're there. Meantime, Janeway is fully recovered, and she is quite angry at Chakotay.
I love the surgery. Took like 15 minutes.
They're done.
It's like, yeah, it's like the quickest surgery ever. It's like, I gotta reconstruct the neural pathways, otherwise she'll be a vegetable forever. 15 minutes later, oh, she's done. That's enough time for Chakotay to have messed everything up.
Right. So he explains to her that they want to go back to Borg space, and she is pissed off that he didn't push it farther and just say, we're not doing that. This is how it's going to... Like, didn't give him their own terms, and he just broke off the whole deal. So
this is an airlockable offense, I think.
blow him out the airlock, too.
Yeah, she's like, yeah, just go visit your Borg friends, and you just airlocked.
All right, so Chakotay is definitely not on her good side, and they Chakotay and Janeway have a discussion about how a past thing that 7 of 9 told them, how they were, as a race, that they were never going to achieve greatness because, what were the words they used? You're erratic.
You were small and you think in small
conflicted,
terms.
Conflicted, disorganized. Every decision is debated. Every action is questioned. Every individual entitled their own small opinion. You lack harmony, cohesion, greatness. It will be on your doing. Your undoing. So Chakotay kind of took that to heart and was like, whoa, damn, just lays down truth on me. So they basically come to a decision that even though they disagree, maybe there's a way they could work it out. And this is where their secret plan comes into play.
Janeway says that Chakotay's in the bridge when he goes back to 7 of 9, sort of as an apology.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I put him on in the brig for disobeying. But that's not really what he was doing. They were getting ready to do a link up, so they get into it with the species shows up, and they start firing torpedoes with the nanotechnology.
There's four ships. They shoot four torpedoes. It looks like two of them miss, but they end up saying they all hit.
They all hit, and they just had a delayed reaction.
And then they blow it up. Yeah, delayed. And then they're like, okay, this is a good demonstration. Let's go back to regular space, and they go
right and. This is where 7 of 9 decides she's going to take over Voyager. She's got everything. She knows everything works. She just has to deliver the goods now. So she's going to simulate the whole ship. There's a little conflict in the bridge. Tom Paris tries to shoot her a couple times.
And Janeway tells Harry Kim to do something. Harry Kim immediately says, I can't.
I can't. I don't know.
I can't do this.
I don't know. I'm just Manson. Then this is where their scorpion...
They scorpion the scorpion, so a smaller scorpion got on the other scorpion's back.
Right. Exactly.
Pyramid scorpion.
Yes, yes. There you go. And basically, by using one of those neurotransmitter, Chakotay reaches out to Seven of Nine and starts basically confusing her with his
emotions,
his random thoughts,
and playing in a field with her parents.
Right. So
I'm pretty sure she was never in a field with her parents.
So it's enough that they overload her circuits. She's kind of knocked out, and that's when the species comes out of subspace or into, I don't know how many ships there were. Like
it was like six. Like
there was a lot. There was more.
Maybe like a dozen.
There was a lot. So
once you come out, they shoot the high yield one, which apparently isn't as high yield as the 5 light year one, but
it knocks out a whole bunch of them
instantaneously. No delayed reaction this time,
right? So, and this was the good thing is that that they kind of get the message like, oh, this is a pretty strong weapon, and they take off, and they've beaten the species, and they kind of go back to their own subspace or their parallel dimension, fluid space.
Fluidic space, yes.
So, and that's pretty much ties it up. The only thing is that now that they have Seven and Nine on board, and they
severed her from the collective.
They severed from collective and
with feels,
and they're going to start bringing her back to human. So this is the true introduction of her as a character, where we see her. She's becoming.
Yeah, her skin is less green and less like veiny, and and it ends up with a really close up on her implants.
So there we have the episode laid out. It's like I said, it's a two parter, so there's a lot of information there to go through. And guys.
She's got lots of Borg implants. What are you talking about?
All right, so let's go back to the whole idea that we were talking before about the whole the discussion, the debate between Chakotay and Janeway. It seems like a good off jumping point there, just to talk about the ethics of getting rid of a whole species. I just think that's it's a heavy topic. I don't know how else to even approach it other than, you know, Chakotay obviously wants to let nature take its own way, but then sometimes nature is going to work out in your favor, and then that's it for you.
Yeah, it is.
I don't think it was more a matter of him wanting nature to more take its way. I think he was looking at preserving the crew. I think he was concerned that Janeway wasn't looking at all the way through the fact that the Borg were going to betray them at the earliest convenience, and that, you know, maybe he was doubting her ability to deal with them appropriately.
That's a good point, but the only other thing is that sooner or later that if whoever wins, either the Borg would come into their space or species, 8472 would.
I mean, it's a lose-lose situation, and no matter how you look at it, really, because if 8472 wins, they're just crazy, horrifyingly technologically advanced, and if the Borg gets this new technology, they'd be even more unstoppable.
Yeah, good point.
Or if this new species got that technology. So, I mean, there's a lot of major issues there. You know, how do you outsmart around two enemies like this and keep this technology that we just made away from these guys?
Right.
You know, that's a huge covering your ass sort of protocol. And that's a lot of balls to juggle. I can understand doubting that and how big of a risk that is for the crew. But at the same time, he should have had a lot more faith in her.
That's my point. I think this is where Janeway is captain. This is why John Luke is captain. This is why Kirk is captain. These are people that are they're not just smart. They're not just very good at what they're doing, but they also have something that the average person to see through something to this nature. This is a testament of how Janeway is in command. She's going to push the crew farther than they probably thought they could have gone, and. It's scary. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'd probably be doubting it too. I'd be like,
strong leaders gain strength through the faith of their followers. Like, the more they believe that she can pull them through that, the better she is able to pull them through that.
Right, but that might be...
At least to me.
Yeah, and I agree, but I think it's also that sometimes you don't know, like, you know, it's like having a gym instructor or somebody like that's trying to teach you how to do something you don't think you can get through it, and then all of a sudden you do it, and you're like, oh, wow.
Or maybe
or teacher that challenged you to do something, and then you can do it. So I think it's the same idea that Janeway has that. And, I mean... You are talking about destruction of a race potentially. I mean, my thought too is after they get this weapon, I mean, who's to say that the Borg doesn't use that and go into their space and just start invading and just destroying them and using their resources?
Which they actually would do.
Oh, the Borg.
That's the nature of the Borg.
The Borg started it. They figured out there was fluidic space and they stuck their nose in and didn't realize they were going to get their butt kicked.
Right, but my point is now that they have this technology, the nanotechnology, are they going to just now go into space and just start just destroying their that race?
Do they really have it, though?
No.
It's never referenced again, so I don't think they do, although technically they should if Seven knows about it.
Every Borg that was working on it was destroyed beyond Seven, and Seven didn't have enough time to fully communicate all the plans. All she got was the communications.
Okay, so
she received communication.
Yeah, so she received the communication that they were all receding back into to their own space. That's right. But I mean, my thought is, with the Borg Collective, I don't see why they couldn't come up with that.
It does seem like a shortcoming, but
a lot of damage, insufficient Borg technology aboard. Yeah,
I mean, I'm just. Maybe. I just think it's going to happen sooner or later. I mean, knowing the Borg. So, it's a hard choice. It's like when Chakotay goes and he thinks that this might be a bad idea, not just for the crew, but just, you might be getting rid of a whole species, And Janeway's like, oh, that might be good in the end, too,
Yeah,
but, I mean, the species didn't have a moral concern.
No, they didn't. But, I mean, do we take that in consideration, too? I mean...
They have for most. I mean, there's a lot of adversarial races that they ran into, through the course of Star Trek. But, I mean, this is the first time they actually considered completely eradicating a species.
Well, other than John Luke with Hugh, he had the option to do that. And he backed away from that.
Because it's not their decision.
Right. Well, I mean, but when we talked about that that last episode, I mean that the admiral came back with John Luke and kind of spanked John Luke that he didn't deliver that weapon.
Yes, Nechayev. More Nechayev.
Yeah. No, but I mean, she was like, you should have done that. And even John Luke was like, why didn't I do it when I had the chance? And Riker was like, you made the right choice. You
did the moral thing, which is what Jean-Luc Picard does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is a hard thing. It's like to make that choice, how do you make those choices? I guess that's why certain people.
Well, Janeway's like, hey, the Borg are hard enough to beat. If these things are beating the Borg, there's no really second thought on these things need to be wiped out. Because if we have a hard time with the Borg, this is going to be even worse.
Right.
So, I mean, I understand that
even,
logic.
Even then, that's not their fight. For me, when Janeway got involved was when they made the statement that the weak shall perish. That wasn't, whatever they're doing with the Borg and 8427, that's their thing. But then they made an issue when they basically told them that they were going to die too. At that point, it became Janeway's battle.
Well, I mean, the weak will perish. I mean, if the Borg are weak in their eyes, everyone's weak in their eyes, because nobody can hold a candle to the Borg, really.
Which makes them a very big threat.
Right, absolutely. And I think that's the thing that with this... that's why I think that in the end, Janeway made the best choice. And Chakotay... because it all worked out in the end, but, I mean, it was like... Chakotay kind of, when Janeway was out, when she got knocked out from that attack and she was in sick bay, how he kind of went behind her, orders and changed things and broke off the deal. I mean, it worked out in the end, but it could have really backfired.
Definitely.
That could have gone a lot more poorly than it did.
If this was a three-parter, which it would have been really cool if they made it a three-parter, to see that backfire, but they were only doing it as a two-parter, and they had to wrap it up. So everything wrapped up real quickly. Janeway wasn't in sick bay very long. It just all... Voyager did this a lot, I think, where, like, there's, like, this crazy conflict, and, like, you know, they're against each other, and then, you know, it's all okay at the end, and it almost hurts a lot, especially in the Equinox episodes, where they, you know, like, they basically, Chakotay basically mutinies, and then it's, everything's okay at the end, and it's just, like, it's just... Not realistic writing.
That's the problem with a lot of TV. I mean, Star Trek doesn't do it as often, but I mean, a lot of TV is like, we always like, you know, you have these sitcoms where the character wins like, you know, $1 million and somehow by some silly thing it's
lost at the end of the episode.
Yeah, the episode, and they're back to normal so they can write another episode.
Like everything's got to reset at the end.
Right.
And for Voyager, they missed out on such a great opportunity that things not reset with them being stranded and the whole thing of them trying to get home. Like, it could have been an arc show, really, and it really wasn't. It was just really episodic, and everything went back to normal at the end, and they spent a lot of time in Next Generation introducing the Maquis. They reinforced the Maquis in Deep Space Nine, and then Voyager, just to set up Voyager, where a Maquis ship and a Federation ship have to, like, work together, and they got over that difference really quick.
Well, I think that's because they realized that they were all they have, and they have to rely on each other. I mean, and you know, I think the first two seasons
just seemed like an awful lot of setup to just fizzle out like that. I understand when you're not in Cardassian space, there's no Maquis to really.
Right.
But there's still different ideas.
I don't know if they set up the Maquis just to set up Voyager. I think it was a good storyline, no matter what.
It was, but it felt like they set it. I mean, they were setting up all the blocks in Next Generation, then they set up more blocks, and then they launched the show with this idea of Maquis versus Federation.
I don't know if that was the end goal when they made up the Maquis, but I'm sure that was part of it that they wanted to work out.
Well, from what I've read on Memory Alpha, it seems like Paramount came to them and said, "We want another show," and then in the middle of Deep Space Nine, they were like, "We want another show," like, after Next Generation went off the air. Right. So, like, the company kept saying, "Give us more shows."
Right.
And they kind of just did what they could. And they did great.
Right.
With under the constraints and having to, like, siphon off team members to work on another show. It's just, it sounded like absolute madness. Because all this stuff is happening at the same time, plus the movies.
Right. Yeah, It still comes down to, like, you know, the Maquis are, even though that they have some Federation officers that, you know, are that are no longer Federation officers, they're not true through and through Federation officers. I mean, Chakotay obviously went to Starfleet and raised to the rank of commander, but there's a reason why he left, you know, and
yeah.
He might not be. You know, the best commander out there. I don't
know. He's the worst commander that we know of.
I'm trying to think if there's anybody worse.
I don't know. He's got his moments, but...
Yeah, I guess. He doesn't bother me that much, but, I mean, I think there's a couple times where I'm like, oh, right, you know.
The problem is, it's just, he's so... He's got this nice balanced level of being a good first officer, and then he has these epic fails.
Yeah.
And that's all you can ever really see are these epic moments of just rock bottom. And then he's just mediocre.
He doesn't, like, shine through anything else.
Yeah, no, he doesn't have these bright, shining moments. He has these epic fails, and then he's a good first officer, and that's it.
Yeah, like, Riker has these bright, shining moments. Even if he has a mistake here and there, he always comes up on top. You know, he's doing really well, where Chakotay doesn't seem to do that. Who's a second command, Deep Space Nine?
Kira.
Yeah, Kira has her good moments too. So
she makes her good moments.
She makes it happen.
I'm going to have this victory.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay?
She will scream and stomp until it happens.
Yes,
I will have my tantrum. It is mine. Okay, it's yours.
So, what are parts that we kind of talked about this heavy subject? So, what are just other parts that stuck out to you guys in particular about this episode that you really liked or really didn't like?
To me, I like that the Borg kind of still stayed kind of the Borg that we remember. I think at the same time they did have First Contact was out.
First Contact came out a year before. That's the first time we actually saw the tubules being used.
So, but we don't see the Queen or any reference to the Queen to this. So they kind of left that out.
Yes.
I kind of like that because I always kind of liked the Borg without the Queen. But I mean, I am going along with it just because it's canon. And the other side of it, I liked. I just thought Janeway's, like I said, I just really liked Janeway's courage through this, that she could go through, and this is really, like I said, I think this separates, you know, an average officer to an amazing officer, that she could go through this. Whether you agree with it or not, the plan worked, and it actually helped them quite a bit, so.
What about you, Faith?
I do have to agree with the statement about Janeway's courage. Like, it takes a lot to have to explain something like that to your crew, because you have to state it to them with a tone of conviction to make them go, yeah, okay, that's a oh, yeah, we're okay, we'll do it. It's not a great idea, but we'll do it,
right?
But you know, just to have them, you know, have the faith in her to follow through on that. I did like the counterpart with Chakotay. I think they played it a lot sappier than they could have. They could have played that from a lot stronger position, because I mean, really give them a stronger argument. Give him a more realistic argument for the character. The counterpoint definitely should have been there, but not like that. That was not within that character's voice.
You didn't like Chakotay's counter argument?
I didn't like the counterpoint, the tone of the counterpoint. I think from the way that the character has evolved and the back history of the character, that it just completely invalidated it. Like anybody else could have stated that. Chakotay, no.
Interesting.
And I don't know if you guys have realized throughout the course of this episode, but I'm not the biggest Janeway fan, but I actually really stand behind her in this episode. I think she was really well written, and Kate Mulgrew always does a great job acting Janeway. I have no problem with Kate Mulgrew at all.
She's a great actress.
She really is. I just feel like Janeway usually isn't written the best.
Actually, she said that this is her favorite episode. The Scorpion. The thing is, it's the best that the whole crew, I mean, the whole acting crew and everything did.
And
you can see that.
And one of the highlights for me was almost no Neelix.
Yeah, jeez, thank God.
It was well acted. Actually, Kate Mulgrew came up with the idea for doing the Leonardo da Vinci stuff, which is actually some of my favorite stuff. In the episode, I really like John Rhys-Davies and his portrayal of Leonardo da Vinci.
Yeah, that was cool. I like that she used something to kind of like as an inspiration, something different. She was like, even in the last couple minutes, she's writing her captain's log again with a quill pen. You know, just to have a different feel.
It's got to be cathartic.
It yeah. feels more human somehow.
Right.
Get away from all the technology.
But way slower. Jesus.
Captain Stock. Yeah, oh wait, I'm writing.
Holographic pen. Yeah, on a holodeck.
Yeah, it feels more.
I bet it writes like a Bic though.
Super.
It sounds scratchy, but it's smooth. It's
yeah, right, exactly.
And then it just instantly converts to like, you know, binary, and it gets filed into her log.
The one thing I didn't understand is she walks away with the captain's log in her hand, and then she walks out the thing. It's like it's still there. Doesn't make any sense. It would have disappeared as she walks out of the holodeck.
Well, but the thing is, the holodecks, they say everything disappears, but the holodecks actually work in tandem with transporters and replicators. So she might have, like, you know, requested actual replicated.
She could have. Maybe those
yeah,
off
she could have paper.
I guess. I had to think about that.
I mean, it's plausible.
Well, because they eat on the holodeck all the time. Are they being 3-year-olds and fake eating? Like, or are they being replicated food?
I just thought
and it being beamed to them in the holodeck.
I thought the poop was beamed out of them.
You never see anyone go to the bathroom. Like, I can't wait for transporters. That's the first thing I want. Just like not have to go to the bathroom.
I think that's what's going to happen. I think the toilets were actually just beam the waste out. And they just then recycle it into the Matrix. And,
like, whenever they're idly pressing buttons on their console and not really do anything, that's what's happening.
Oh, you think they just beam the waste right out of their bowels?
Yeah,
oh, all right, okay.
Like right from their station. They just, like, they're just...
Yeah, maybe.
When they're just, like, idly tapping buttons and nothing's really happening on screen, that's...
Beam me up, Scotty.
They're just, you know... the bowel beam. It's the BB.
Oh, my God.
So that's what B'Elanna does in her spare time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She studies their bowels and makes sure it's that like, they don't accidentally beam part of their intestines out.
She's studying the mineral content to do the boner lock. So
yeah, the boner lock. And she's got the bowel lock, too.
The bowel lock. Mm.
She probably knows how to lock on every molecule of mineral in your body and relocate it one bit at a time.
She wanted to do with her daughter.
Well, she's... Anyway, so
not even gonna touch that one yet. Oh, we'll touch it when we talk about that episode.
Yes.
And what do we think about just going back to Janeway and Chakotay about him having like sort of a different take on dealing with the Borg? Like he walks on the cargo bay with the people with the rifles and stuff like that. You know, it's like. He's got a completely, like, I'm, you know, don't mess with me, you know.
Whereas Janeway surrendered and went over with just Tuvok and was on the Borg ship surrounded by however many Borg are on Ace Cube. Like, there's only, like, 16 of them on Voyager, and, like, Chakotay's got to go in with their guns. Not like the guns do anything. They, like, adapt after one shot.
She's got something to prove. Because, you know, she doesn't have anything to measure up to these guys. She, you know, she's already won this fight in her head, at least. But here's Chakotay, all nervous.
Yeah, he's...
I'm going to lose this fight, so I need to look like a big dog.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's not the size of the guns you hold, right?
Apparently, it gives him confidence.
It's the gun club for men.
That's a little embarrassing, because, I mean, there's a time and a place to show that sort of weakness as a leader. I'm sure he felt it was a show of strength, but realistically, in that type of situation, it looks like weakness.
Yeah, I was kind of confused with that, too. I mean, obviously, they did that for a reason, but I always felt that was sort of...
It's out of character for him. He's not the type of person to make that type of social misjudgment and that type of... You know, he understands what it is like to be in a battle circumstance.
Right.
This is not something you do.
Right. What? And then we have Kes with her telepathic abilities. Now, the next episode after Scorpion, Kes is actually written off the show.
See, that's really interesting because, like, in between seasons 3 and 4, there was talks of both Kes and Kim being written off the show, which is why Kim was all, like, had that fungal infection up his nose.
Yep.
But
space herpes.
But, man, did species 8762 like have his like you know places in the wrong way? Like in Star Trek 6, it's like not everyone keeps their genitals in the same place.
I know.
Maybe
sex ed was not something that developed over there. So don't hold it against them. They just spread it.
There's so much in over there. There's space is liquid.
Space is fluid. So that gives you inform what's going on over there. So. anyways,
there are other holodecks filled with liquids. It's futile to mop them up.
Everything is suspended.
What was?
Sorry, I had to bring up a Captain Carl joke.
So. Oh, man. So, just going back to Kes real quickly, but I mean, we saw her telepathic ability. It was. What is the one where they find I can't remember her race. The Ocampa.
Yeah, the Ocampa.
Yeah, and they in
the second set.
Yeah.
The caretaker.
The second one where they find it, and he and they're trying to show her telepathic ability can have more.
Yeah,
the kinetic abilities. Yeah, and that's where you see it first. I think that she really, you know, can do more than what was expected of her. And now, obviously, this episode shows that she's, you know, being in contact with them. But then,
what was that?
That particular part of her abilities, the psychokinetic side, she was not able to manifest again after the Ocampa incident until this point in time.
Right.
And they tried to train up that side with the empathy, and the rest they were able to do, but the psychokinetic she was unable to access.
Right, but then the next episode, is it called The Gift? Or can't remember, but something
Yeah,
like
The
that.
Gift ends up in full swing. It's like you're watching her abilities just spiral out of control.
Right. And she gives them her parting gift as she goes off the shuttlecraft. They slingshots Voyager.
Like 20,000 or like a whole bunch of light.
Yeah,
they shaves 10 years off their 70-year journey.
Right, exactly.
So it's kind of cool, but I just don't understand why they wrote. I mean, the reason Garrett Wang didn't get written off the show was because in the interim between seasons, he got voted sexiest man alive in some sort of magazine or something. This is what I've read. He got voted one of the sexiest men ever or something. Okay. So because of the male sex appeal, they kept him on the show and only Jennifer got the boot. Jennifer Lean got the boot instead of both of them.
Yeah. Still depressed that Neelix getting kicked off the show then. Can you take Neelix with you? God, he's the one guy I cannot take on that whole show.
But that's what's so great about the Scorpion. He had two lines in the Ready Room, the two times in the Ready Room in Scorpion Part 1. I don't even think he showed his face in Scorpion Part 2. And he didn't go to the to sick bay and try to cheer up Harry Kim being eaten alive.
Yeah.
He didn't go do that, which you wouldn't. He almost always tries to go to sick bay and cheer the person up.
I know, he's a morale officer or whatever. Yeah, so Cass disappears after this next episode. So apparently having
Jerry too much, Ryan takes her place.
Yeah, I wonder if it had to do with a budget issue or something.
Number of people on the show. Yeah, I'm sure that's what it was. Although Kess was a strange character to bring into the show anyway, considering her race only lives 5 or 6 years usually. So your typical Star Trek show is 7 seasons, so why would you introduce a race that'll die before you
she
even
wasn't,
get
to She it? Wasn't going to make it, no matter
she
what.
She was supposed to be the one to kick him in the feels later.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, but it didn't really
work out well. Oh, we lost Kess. We didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
That was telegraphed as soon as they mentioned her race didn't live that long. It's she's not going to be at the full run of the show as long as
they bring in the next caretaker. You're like, oh, hey, I'm 14. Right. My dad lived till he was 20.
Right.
So you're going, really? You can't even legally drink.
Ocampans can legally drink by the age of 6 months because that's how fast they grow.
One would hope.
Right. Exactly. That's disturbing. Anyway,
but in the future, we don't have such weird
hang-ups,
faux pas about drinking and drug use, as we discussed last time, because drugs are everywhere in the future, right?
Yeah, I would imagine not, and I guess every race has their own little rules of what they do. So whatever's good for them.
This is for ritualistic purposes. It's okay, I promise.
Yeah,
just don't drink the tea if you're human.
Right, has poison properties. It'll kill you in a minute.
You know, to go back to something I did notice, because I watched the first movie with the Borg in it, and then I rewatched Scorpion. I did notice that the organic aspect of the costume was gone, so that the Borgs had a lot more of a cybernetic appeal, which was kind of neat, because before they had a very organic look. And now there's a lot more armor, a lot more pieces. Like the eyepiece on 7 and 9 was just phenomenal. It was a lot better done than the pieces that we've seen before.
I just wonder how uncomfortable it was, because in television they have to shoot in such a way where people get uncomfortably close to each other. Like in real life, you wouldn't talk with people like that, but because of the 4:3 ratio, they just had to be in the same frame. Right. Like I wonder how it was to be with that thing sticking out 6 inches from her face and having to be in the same. Really awkwardly close shot with her.
Please don't stab me in the butt.
Don't knock out my eye, please.
Yeah, Jerry Ryan even said that because the makeup was so, because she's in her a rubber suit. She was sweating and she was really uncomfortable for those episodes.
She was cast 2 weeks before the show started getting in production for season 4, and as she was cast, she got a body cast and a head cast and a hand cast. And
one of the in the first shoots, because they had to do it so quickly, they didn't. The designer didn't take a lot of things into consideration. She actually blacked out the first time they had her in full costume because part of the prosthetics were pressing on the carotid artery.
Oh, geez.
So it actually cut off blood flow to her brain, and she ended up blacking out.
Oh, the whole bodysuit just was since it was basically one huge cast, they just, I guess they filled it up too thick whenever they were casting the mold for her body. So they just built it up too thick, probably. And so every time she turned her neck, like, it just cut off the carotid.
Wow, that's crazy.
Well, a lot of those materials shrink. That's the downside to the rubber and the plastic. It'll actually shrink by a small percentage, and that's just enough that if your measurements aren't precise, you can have issues like that.
Right.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Talk about pressure, too. It's like, you know, it's your first, it's like your first a couple episodes, and you don't know if you're going to be on there for a long time.
And she didn't even think she was going to talk. And she started flipping out, like, I didn't realize I had all these lines, because I just thought I was just going to be there, and there was going to be the collective voice or whatever.
Right. And then then she's got to do all these, these insane lines that a lot of actors always talk that they have too much, all this, like, technology talk that they have a hard time, memorizing lines and everything. So that's another thing.
She handled it all beautifully.
Scary.
She had such a good presence and acting. It was just really great. She said the uncomfortableness of the costume really helped get in that the spirit of things, though.
I imagine. Do we want to talk about Jerry Ryan and Kate's thing between each other? I just don't understand it.
Kes was the young, beautiful woman on the show until Seven came along, and I don't understand why she was threatened by Jerry and not Jennifer Lean. She was the young, beautiful girl, and then they got rid of the young, beautiful girl one, and then they bring in young, beautiful girl number two. And, I mean, they're both basically wearing bodies, like skin-tight-ish body suits, jumpsuits.
Yeah, I don't know if you had any other insights on that, if there's anybody been written about it, or I was curious because
I see interviews where they say, like, you know, it was rough, and Jerry said it was really, really tough on set with her.
Right. I was just curious if anybody knew anything about that, because I'm kind of ignorant on that. So
I don't know. I can see the social dynamic between women and that. I mean, Jerry Ryan's a more assertive personality. I can see that happening pretty easily.
My feeling was was it more of a writing standpoint that, you know, maybe she was getting more shows going to be written out on for 7 and 9 compared to Janeway episodes, you know? Because I always hear that no matter what series is that when they're always trying to get an episode where they have, like, you know, they're in the spotlight, their characters in the spotlight.
And Seven was in the spotlight an awful lot after she came on. And, you know, it's definitely comes down to the writers, and it's kind of a shame. But 7 of 9, the Doctor and Naomi Wildman are probably the three best-written characters on Voyager consistently written for. And I feel like all the other ones kind of fell by the Janeway. No. The Janeway. Fell by the Janeway. No, I mean the roadway or whatever. They just kind of got lost along the way.
I do feel like Janeway got the shaft from writers. I mean, they explored a character a little bit, but there's a lot we just kind of gloss over. It's like, yeah, she's the captain, whatever. You know, you don't like get into, like, every other captain, you get a lot more into them. And, like, you know, Sisko, you see a lot about his background, his development of his character. I mean, obviously,
so much background on Sisko.
Obviously, Picard is, you know, just rich with stories. Same thing with Kirk, but Janeway always, it just seemed to be like, yeah, she was the captain,
and she's there, and, you know,
and other than a couple things, you don't really get much from her, you know.
And it's, I mean, you know, and it's no fault of Kate Mulgrew. It's just it's the way the writing happened, and like the writers loved the Doctor, loved 7 of 9, and the couple times Naomi Wildman was on, she was great for a kid to be being written for. I mean, like, Wesley was super annoying because, I mean, and that's not. That's not the actor's fault either. It's not Will Wheaton's fault. It's the writers. They wrote Wesley Crusher as like a 6-year-old when he's obviously like 16.
Right.
And I'm just like, it's just the lines that coming out of his face are just like, wow. Like, would you even really say that?
Right. No, I was just curious. I mean, I thought that was an odd thing, but it is what it is.
So any other takeaways for this episode?
Well, they got through Borg space, so I guess we can not worry about that anymore.
One less concern.
Yeah.
Not.
They'll show up again. They'll come back.
Borg space is vast. They got him through like a section of Borg space, I'm sure, but not the whole thing.
Yeah, Borg really turned out to be their big nemesis in the end.
And they outsmarted the Borg, and they beat the Borg all these times. It was just ridiculous. But this episode was good, because they didn't actually fight the Borg with any weapons. The one thing I will say from a technology standpoint, Voyager took like 3 or 4 blasts from 8472's guns, and they didn't blow up like the Borg ships did at the very beginning,
right,
which are usually tougher.
Right.
So,
well, you know, hey, they just got away lucky. So I just felt that this episode showed that human ingenuity and creativeness is what really trumped the human species over the Borg's collective knowledge and what they're capable of, because they couldn't come up with what they had.
And speaking of human creativeness,
oh jeez,
you are the most beautiful woman in the galaxy. You don't know how long I've wanted to tell you that.
But you're afraid.
Yes.
Of me?
Of us, of what we might become. Then you're inviting me in.
I'm not sending you away.
That's more than I expected.
Is it as much as you hoped?
To hope is to recognize the possibility. I had only dreams.
Dreams can be dangerous.
Not these dreams. I dream of a galaxy where your eyes are the stars and the universe worships the night.
Putting me on a pedestal so high you may not be able to reach me.
Then I'll learn how to fly. You are the heart in my day and the soul in my night.
We lost 2 more relays. I can't.
Shut up, kid.
So we have our very first Harry Fails.
Yes, he does. Poor Harry.
It's just so beautiful. He is so bushy-tailed and bright-eyed. They know danger is just around the corner from Kes's premonition, and he hears some ruckus, looks around, and jumps in between Tuvok and Chakotay just in time to get caught with a wang of species 8472. A
wang of species. Yes, and this is where he gets the tendrils up the nose.
It's just if he just would have just like held still and just like stayed right next to Chakotay and Tuvok, he would have been okay. But he's just like, I'm gonna run toward danger
gonna wrestle it. Let's fight this thing.
We've never seen this thing before. You're running towards something like that's big and scary, and the Borg are afraid of. Probably isn't the brightest idea.
That's why he's an ensign.
Yeah, honestly, he probably just tripped. His shoes weren't tied.
Yeah.
He's going to cover it with, you know, I was trying to protect my superior officers. Realistically, his shoes were not tied.
Harry's just walking through the Borg ship. Dum, 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 dum,
no, what?
Dum, 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 dum,
dum, dum, dum. I think one of the Borg severed hands tied his shoes together.
He left the Borg hand clamped on his boot because he didn't know how to tie his own shoes. That works.
Well, you know, he
reporting
he,
for duty.
Oh, Harry Kim, it's 1. No, it's 5. No, it's 7. It's like, are you just reading the numbers as they come up, or are you actually trying to count them on the screen?
Janeway's like, Mr. Kim, just give me the full analysis when you get all the data.
When you're done analyzing it, back to me.
I'm convinced the station is broken. Like, every time he uses it, it's like, oh, I can't. Or, like, he's reading the wrong numbers, or he's not even looking at the right screen.
I think he's just, I think he's probably just messy, you know, because he got those LCD,
probably got some Cheetos.
Yeah, he's got like all these like grease and crumbs on it. He never wipes off his consoles, so he can't read everything, and his fingers are always slipping all over the place.
And Cheetos are the same color as like enemy ships on those.
It's like, wait, oh, that was a Cheeto. Sorry. Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs.
So
we're so mean to Harry Kim, and rightfully so.
Oh no, it could get worse. Well, he did have tendrils up his nose.
Yeah.
Mm, and
he
then
paid for it.
Haven't even gotten that yet.
And then when he came up on the bridge, Vlada, after he was better, was like, Vlada's like, you still got a tendril up your nose.
I know. It was a good line, but I thought that was awfully cruel for Vlada just to throw that out there.
He was being eaten from the inside.
No, I think not.
Well, it was definitely up her alley as a Klingon, but
she saw it. She walked through that door and she owned it.
Yeah. She definitely did.
That was great.
I know what's going to happen. I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah, he, and just also another little fail there is, and this does not have to do with Scorpion, but it's the next one, The Gift, where he tries to engage in conversation with Seven of Nine.
Oh!
He says, so yeah. I guess you run into a lot of species.
We've assimilated X number of species.
And he's just, and he goes, so you've met a lot of species. And, he goes, that was a stupid question. He even says it to himself. Why did I say that? He's like, oh, it was great.
And then she's like, oh, you're attracted to me. Take off your clothes. He's like, what? No!
I don't think that was that episode. I think it was
one after.
But
it's great. We're definitely going to bring that up in the Harry Fails once we go over that episode.
Yeah. No, but Harry Kim did not do well in this. He spent a... I even think he said something about that. This was like, you know, he was spent the whole time laying on the bio bed, you know, with his makeup all over his face and his eyes all, you know, crusted over.
Who else but Harry Kim?
You know, even Janeway, who was knocked unconscious, had a huge gash in her head, had to be induced in coma. She was up and running in like 15 minutes.
She's
like, I'm ready to go. Harry Kim's got, you know,
you can't broke my brain. It's already done, bro.
Yeah.
They can't even sedate Harry, and he's just stuck with tendrils up his
nose. I know. Oh. Harry Kim's got, what is it? He's got alien herpes on the face, and he's out.
And it's getting worse. It's spreading.
Oh, my God. It'll never go away.
It's just a cold sore, guys.
It's all right. Wait, there's something hanging now, isn't it?
Don't pick your nose.
Oh, my God. His tendrils coming out of his nose like Tarzan's hanging off of it.
And other places we can't see.
Oh. Yeah, poor Harry. Oh. So that was Harry has a definitely a disadvantage now with more pickup lines.
Oh, most definitely. Oh, especially Bellana's never going to forget that. I guess he'll never hook up with her, right?
No, he definitely won't.
She is a Klingon. She's probably ate things that look weirder.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Oh, it's green god. It's rare.
Yeah, I know. blood pie or whatever.
What flavor is this?
It's lime gah.
Oh, lime. It's like lime chips. Gawk with lime chips. Oh my god. Moving worms.
They're telling you it's lime, watermelon jello, and it actually turns out to be lime. No.
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 So do we have anything else to say about Harry's fail?
It's for itself.
Yeah, he really messed up. You know, he took a nosedive into the alien tail.
If he just waited, they could have all been beamed up. It would have been fine. I mean, she was getting that boner lock ready.
Boner lock was ready to go.
Yep, she was set. He, not so much.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, since we've done Deep Space Nine, now we've done Voyager. Next week, we will be talking Enterprise, Shadows of Pajem.
There we go. Learning how Vulcans aren't always as logical and nice as you think they are.
Oh, spying is... Oh, wait, no. They're not spying. It's anything they do is logical.
Without emotion.
They would never spy.
No. Vulcans, just build monasteries on planets near Andoria for no reason.
Yes, exactly.
If you claim they will never spy, then you do not understand their history of watching Earth.
Yes.
Just, you know, case of play right there.
Right.
They're need to see, an accident.
Well, they can try, but, you know, they're not very good at that.
So all that and more.
Next time on Cynthia Harlan. All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or follow them on Twitter at warp11. You can find us online at Synthaholics.com. You can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. Our Twitter is at SynthaholicDuo. If you want to follow us individually, you can follow me at David_J_Duncan and Aaron at Blackbird2004. If you liked our podcast, please subscribe to us on iTunes. We can also be found on Stitcher. Please tell your friends about the show. Also, if you could leave us a review and a rating, that would help us out so much. It'll help us learn how to improve so we can reach more of our fellow Trek fans. We'd love to hear your feedback. Live long and prosper. Country boys born and raised at the stars we did gaze. The next morning he left stinking of gin. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Sounds good. We can hear you.
Yes, we can hear you. I'm going to do some testing on the mic to see how we sound. Synthaholics the musical. We will do an episode in really bad key.
Was there ever a musical one? I mean, I know that Buffy the Vampire Slayer did a musical.
I don't know. Star Trek spared us, but the best intro to a Star Trek episode ever is like Doctor Thinker Talker or something like that, where he's singing some the ritual something and then he starts singing the Doctor. Well, actually, yeah, the Doctor has the episode where he goes and sings for this whole planet, and he talks about leaving.
Are we talking about? Are we talking about
the only Doctor that sings? You've got one guess.
McCoy.
You failed! You failed, Star Trek trivia!
I think you gotta turn your mic down a little bit. You're a little sharp.
Sharp?
Yeah.
Am I B sharp?
It's a B sharp. So black holes make the sound of in the key of B flat. I learned that from inside a Snapple bottle.
Your Snapple is a lie.
I'm just reporting what I've read.
It's not always true. It's like the internet, man.
I know. It could be a lie. I can't. Snapple wouldn't lie to me.